If you tell her now, it will all blow up.
But at least she'll know who she is.
Every move you make will never value you break.
I need names. People working in the CIA.
Every smile you fake, every claim you stick.
I've got them.
This is the West Coast Project podcast for the Americans. My name is Mike.
And I'm Jamie.
Jamie, how did you like One Day in the Life of Anton Bakhlenov?
I loved it so much.
Why?
It was just, well, okay, so in a season, well, in a series and a season filled with superlative writing, the writing in this episode was just so top-notch. It was so well done. The dialogue was beautiful. I loved it. I'm on cloud nine.
Do you think we need to get the robot back on for the... We have two more, right? We have 312 and 313? Yes.
Right.
Maybe we should try to get the robot back on for the last one. Because the robot comes up in this one. He plays an important part in this one.
That's right, he does.
All right, so let's go through it. Paige keeps digging, which Paige got me a little mad at her. She was, like, grating my nerves. She's smarmy and sarcastic. Asking about that shitty vacation in the woods. And, is it really a travel agency? Are you really married? Are those your real, you know, what are your real names? Is Henry really my brother?
Mike, I swear, I loved it so much because to me, that was, now we realize that if you and I had grown up siblings, I would have gotten on your last nerve because that was every question I had in my mind. When she was asking that, I was like, yes, 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 ask it.
And then Elizabeth's trying to ixnay on the Ames nay. There's Henry's coming down. And they try to shut her up.
Yeah.
So their names. I didn't guess. Why don't I ever know that Philip's name was Misha?
They don't talk about it much.
His son's name is Misha, his fake son.
Right.
His fake son that I'm going to know that we're going to find out is not real.
I'm telling you he's real.
All right. Gabriel had to come up with a name real fast, and he just uses the same name as Philip. Yeah, his name's Misha.
Irina. It was Irina.
All right. How do you say Elizabeth's name? I'm having a hard time with it.
Nadezhda.
Yeah, but she says it a little more elegantly than that.
Well, I'm not Russian.
Nadezhda.
Nadezhda.
N-A-D-H-E-Z-D-H-A. Nadezhda. Two D-H's in that in a row.
Wow.
All right. Stan is Stan. Who's Stan? That was funny, too.
Yeah.
But she looked when they got mad at each other, she looked like she was going to walk up to Henry and tell him. Paige did.
Yeah. I don't
she
know.
Stops
I
mean, for a second and she's like, I'm going to tell that little fucker. But she's still protective of Henry. She does the more maternity. I'm telling you, they're going to go on the run or something. She's going to be Henry's mother. She says, eat your breakfast.
Oh, my God. Mike.
Can't you picture them on the run? Like, or them estranged from mom and dad and Paige taking care of Henry?
With alphabet cereal and...
yeah.
I cannot picture that.
Well, in a home somewhere, maybe. I don't know. They're making Paige very maternal.
Yeah.
Over and over.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's good. It's good for us to remember that because this is a reminder of why she can't just fly off and say whatever she wants to say. She's got to watch out for Henry.
So that was it. It was a pretty short first scene. The credits roll, and we come back from the commercial, and Gad's working in his office, and Stan comes in to talk to him, and Gad asks, back in August, did we use any names in my office that we should have used in the vault? So they talk about this room, the vault. I guess it's some secret room, like a cone of silence or something.
Yeah.
Like the Maxwell Smart cone of silence.
Yeah.
And they're in that room there, aren't they, when they're talking?
Yep.
So it's a soundproof room of some kind. Pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's a clean room. It's like, I think the CIA has it too. Well, I know the CIA has rooms like that in their different offices where they're, I think they're called clean rooms where no listening devices are installed. They're checked and they're, you know, sort of known to be that's where you can go and speak and nobody's going to observe you.
Or mail listen. Robot doesn't come within 10 feet of that room.
Right, exactly.
All right, so Gabriel comes home, and the Jennings are waiting for him, and they just tell him Paige knows. We told her who we are, but we didn't tell her the details.
Right.
And he has a little conversation with them. Yeah. How do you feel about Gabriel now, Jamie? Any different?
I apply the F word firmly to Gabriel.
Okay.
I don't like it.
He's always the way he's always been.
He's always the way he's always been. He is, you know, I originally thought of him as a benign sort of a fellow. And I have come increasingly to hold him in disdain. And you know, I call him the Angel Gabriel in huge air quotes.
The Angel Gabriel, evil Scrabble genius.
There you go.
He talked to them also about the hotel in Yusef. Mm-hmm. And then he gives Elizabeth another envelope from her mom, and it's not going to last much longer. It's looking pretty bad for her mother, grandmother Elizabeth, or mother Elizabeth.
Right. Okay. Oh. While I'm thinking about it, remember the episode a couple episodes back where we had the old lady?
Uh-huh.
Old lady's name was Betty.
Okay.
That comes up, that name, another derivative of Elizabeth, comes up again later in this episode. There are two things, at least, in this season that were named Elizabeth, or some derivative of, aside from our main character.
Are you going to tell us now, or are we going to remember it when we come across it?
Okay, so it's in the computer room at the hotel. When Elizabeth goes in with that dude that she had to, you know, seduce in order to get access to that room, he calls the computer that he has, he calls it Betsy.
Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, not an accident. I don't know why they did that.
Interesting. Good catch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So as they're leaving, she gets the tape from mom that's probably going to say goodbye, I love you, I'll never see you again, all that sweet stuff. But they leave, and Philip asks Elizabeth if she's okay at the hotel. Now, Jamie, this is another point they're making in the story over and over that I wonder why. This is not her first honey trap, but it's the first time in a while that she's forced to be the honey trap girl. And they seem really, really concerned about it for some reason. And I don't think it's just jealousy. I think it's more than that, of Philip being just jealous of some guy being with his wife.
Yeah. And again, it's lost on me. I don't know what I'm missing.
Yeah, there. I don't know it either. I'm just saying it's got to be something because they keep bringing it up.
Right.
So then she says, well, you have to go see Martha, and tells Philip to take Hans with, because they're not sure what Martha's going to do, and she may have somebody backing up her to catch Philip now, or Clark, whatever he is. So she wants him to take Hans with as a backup.
Right.
All right, and we go to Russia, and Nina and Anton Bakalanov. They still need photos. They start speaking in English, which I think is pretty cool. Now, they do this so no one can understand them in that room, right?
Right.
I wouldn't be too loud, though, because they probably have some way of recording it and catching it later.
Right, which is why they speak kind of low.
They do. But in English, that's a double, you know, double barrier of secrecy. Right. And they talk about inducements, and that Nina might just be another inducement, another hottie that's there to get information.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't like the strangers that they've chosen for him before. And he tells Nina this, and she kind of asks him about it. And then he tells her about his son.
Right.
Pretty cool stuff. He's opening up to Nina.
Yeah. God. I hate it so much and I love it so much because, I think that he needs somebody. He's, you know, he's out there on his own and I don't have good feelings about this guy. I think he's kind of an opportunist. You know, he was cheating on his wife when he was in America. He's not, you know, a stellar stand-up fellow, but he's in a horrible, horrible situation and he's right. You know, it's torture to be in a position where you know your child doesn't know if you're alive or dead. And so he's being tortured. He's being punished. And he needs somebody to talk to. And so I'm really glad, you know, that he has Nina to talk to. And then, so that's why I love it so much.
So what about Nina? Is she really going to be his friend, or is she the super spy?
And that's why I hate it so much, because we don't know. And she is, you know, certainly going to do what she has to do to make things turn out well for her. So, you know, what's going to happen? I don't know. And there's a little bit of sort of ambiguity there, I think, because, you know, she does read, you know, Anton's letters to his son, and, you know, and I her face is cryptic, you know, to me. So I don't know what she's really going to choose. But Nina is someone who has no compunction about.
Yeah, I don't trust Nina as far as I could throw her. I think she's a professional spy. She's out for number one.
That's why she has survived to this point. Nina is all about Nina.
So. All right, now we're going to see somebody who's not as good at this as Nina is Maurice. Maurice and Lisa. Michelle / Elizabeth comes over to Lisa's new place near the what's the plant?
I'm sorry. The Norfolk plant.
No, not Norfolk.
What is it?
Norfolk, Virginia. It's Northrop.
Northrop.
Yeah, she comes over and Maurice is sitting there on the couch waiting. Now, Maurice is one of those dudes, is the hard ass who's also a dumb ass. The guy who asks for way too much and is way too much of a hard ass is always a dumb ass.
Exactly. I swear I was just cracking up in this scene because I was thinking, dude, you think you're just like big and in charge and, you know, it's just he has no clue. And I swear, Mike, I was sitting there looking all around that room for that jar. I really was like wishing the jar was just there, that nasty liquid jar.
No, he just needs that when he goes to work or when he goes out and sits on the park bench or whatever.
Whatever the hell he does.
But he wants money from Michelle's consultant, twice as much as you're getting already. He doesn't probably even know what she's getting.
Right.
But whatever it is, I want twice as much.
It's so stupid. They make him into the worst kind of jerk. I mean, you're just like, when that dude gets it, because you know he's going to die. Somebody's going to kill him.
He's going to be strapped to a test engine or something. But this is exactly what Elizabeth wanted, right? The greed to come out. Like, Lisa's got high security clearance. We're going to get twice as much as you're getting, and we want to use that security clearance. Exactly what she wanted to have happen.
Right. Yeah, and he's just the epitome of a dumb criminal. He knows enough to get himself into trouble. Now, why would he say to her, you know, you're the one in charge. I don't even need to meet your partner because you're the one who's running this, you know?
Right, he throws all of his cards on the table.
Just idiot.
All right, so go back to the office, and Walter Taffin needs to talk to Martha again, Jamie, for several hours. He needs to have her set aside a block of time even. And we meet Gene, the geek computer guy. Now, you work with guys like this, don't you?
I do.
He's in love with Taffin. He loves this guy. He's the first one to talk to about Data.
I know. He's so happy.
Especially in like 1982, it's probably like computers are new and nobody knows about them and probably have nobody you can commiserate with.
Right. And that, you know, and that was such a, you know, okay. So nowadays, that's kind of a thing where we can think about somebody as having a mind that's kind of like a computer. Like we know people like that and, you know, in our everyday lives. But back then, you know, to make that comparison is kind of a clever thing. And I liked it. I like that they put that in there.
Yep, give them a plus, an upvote for writing for that.
Yeah.
All right, back in well, I don't know where, but Yusef and Philip. Where are Yusef and Philip? Somewhere in Washington. About Annalise. And Philip says he was going to change his – or does Yusef say it? He's going to change his life for her.
Yeah, and he was. He asked her to leave her husband and come and be with him, remember?
Yep. And then Yusef asked our question, Jamie, the audience question. How can you do this job, Philip?
I loved it. I loved it so much.
And Philip says, well, you look around and see what hell the world is and you determine what you can try to do about it.
And that was such a great answer. It was almost like they had, you know, the writers talking to the audience. That was one of those moments, and it fit so well. I loved how they did it. I thought it was really appropriate, and it was such a great answer because all of us, but at this point in this series, are scratching our heads and going, what? You know, like screaming, "Aw, the humanity." It's, you know, it's at that point. And so, you know, it was really nice to hear that. And also, even for people like myself who have become unconvinced of Philip's ability to follow this path, given his ambivalence about the whole thing, he clarifies it. He solidifies his unity with the cause.
Yeah, it gives us a really strong reason to say, well, I guess that's why you keep fighting and you don't just bail out and join America for $1 million and live your life as a happy capitalist.
Right.
So the plot continues with the CIA has asked Pakistan to find the three best Mujahideen commanders with good English skills, English language skills. Mm-hmm. And they're bringing them to the U.S. on the 18th of the month. And Yousef doesn't know why, but he thinks it's about these Stinger missiles for shooting down helicopters.
Right.
And Philip asks him, can we turn them? And Yousef says, some of them are reasonable, but not the ones coming here. One of them even cuts off people's heads.
Yeah, God, what the hell? I mean, seriously, like that was a real, I get it, okay, but that was just a little too close to home right now with, you know, things that are happening in the news. It was just really, ugh.
I thought it was another, I'll give him another upvote for writing here, Jamie, because I think we're actually numbed to this way of death now. It was once so horrific when we saw that reporter guy get his head cut off. Yeah. But now it's almost like, oh, they cut another guy's head off. It's like it's almost a way that they do things. We've grown numb to it, callous to it.
Well, maybe. I mean, yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, we could see it that way. And these people being as freaking brilliant as they are, I guess, you know, that's the way we should look at it. It just, oh, God, it turned my stomach so.
Do you think it's time to predict a beheading in the show?
Oh, God, please, no. Please, no, not Misha, not Yousef, not any of our people, not even Yousef, because you know I can't stand him. But even he doesn't deserve that.
How about Chuck? Oh, wait, wrong podcast.
We do a podcast where there's a character called Chuck on this show called Better Call Saul.
And he gets his head cut off, unfortunately. No, just kidding.
It would be quite fortunate.
All right. Well, let's go back to the Jennings house where Paige is in the car in the garage and Elizabeth joins her. Pretty good place, pretty good little refuge zone there in the car in the garage.
Another amazing scene in this season, in this series, in this episode. It was just so beautiful.
They commiserate about Henry doing Eddie Murphy all the time.
Yeah, I loved it.
And Elizabeth even says, that kid's nuts.
I know, I loved it. And see, this is another one of those things, you know, those little language things that we were talking about last podcast. I just love the writing on this show.
Yeah, you could see a mom saying that to her oldest daughter, you know, boy, your little brother's nuts.
Yep.
Like, help me be a mom just for a minute. Let's commiserate together. Let's compare notes.
Exactly.
And then Elizabeth starts in on the, we can only talk to you in private, we'll talk to you, but only in private routine. She kind of lays down the law for that.
Yeah.
And then she tries to win her over a little bit. She talks about her parents, how her father died in the war when she was two, and all she really had was her mother.
And see, and this is, I'm so glad that this scene happened. I'm so glad that that reference happened because this brings us back to the earlier part of this whole series. Elizabeth lies to everyone about her father. Her father was shot as a defect, as a what is that? What did he do?
Defector.
He ran, not a defect, a defector or, he ran away. He ran away. He was dereliction of duty.
Deserter.
Like deserter. He was shot as a deserter and no one knows that. Elizabeth will not tell Philip. She will not tell Paige. She won't tell anyone. But we know it as the audience. We know.
We know it through her mother. If her mother's telling the truth, we know it. But is her mother telling the truth?
These are her memories. Her mother is telling the truth. These are her memories, Elizabeth's memories. memories of her mother.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but it's just, it's so fascinating to me that we know what she's thinking. And this is another indication of that just
manipulation.
Unbelievably. No, it's the writing, Mike. It's the writing that these people do, because people do this.
Well, I know it's manipulation of Elizabeth onto Paige.
Right. They lied, but people lie to themselves all the time. People lie to themselves about, like, what happens in their lives, about their own choices, about the choices of the people they care about, things that are embarrassing to them or shameful to them. They lie all the time. But they don't, like, this, the writing is so good because they set up her psyche in a way that we can see beyond what the people directly involved in her life can see. And it's beautiful.
Well, they don't get cleanly away with it, because Elizabeth talks a little bit more about her life. She says, we lived three families in a single apartment, and my mother had a spirit just like yours, Paige, and I haven't seen her since I came here. But then Paige says, how can I believe you? So Paige calls her on it. Like, that's a very profound story, Mom, but how do I know I should believe you?
Right, right.
They make it complicated. They don't just have Paige fawning, like, oh, you're so such a great mom to have risen above this and survived. She wonders if she should believe her.
Right, yeah. Paige is a very discerning young woman.
A very what young woman?
Discerning.
Oh, yeah. We had a little glitch there, Skype glitch. All right, commercial, Jamie. We come back to Oleg and Tat. I like calling her Tat. It'd be cool to have a girlfriend named Tat. Tatiana.
Full of tattoos.
They come to see Arcady and talk about Operation Zephyr, and Zephyr means robot, right?
Does it?
Well, there's a device roaming the halls picking up sound from all over the office, and they say it's Operation Zephyr.
Well, Zephyr is a cool wind.
Well, I don't care. It's a nickname for the FBI robot, I think.
Actually, you know what? I take that back. I'm thinking of the word Chinook. I'm not thinking of the right word.
You're thinking of Sirocco.
No, I mean, no.
That's also a cool wind.
I was really...
Or a desert wind.
Huh. Hold on a minute. You know, I had a pet. Well, actually, it wasn't my pet. It was my brother's pet. My brother had a pet. I think it was a cat named Zephyr.
Oh, that explains it.
What explains what?
It's your brother's cat. It's a reference.
It is. It's a mild, gentle breeze. There you go.
All right, but it's the robot. It's the thing going through the hallways, picking up sound.
Yeah,
the bug in the robot. So FBI robot, we got to get your ass back on here.
Are you gonna come back, FBI robot?
He should. He's a star.
He needs
exposure. He needs more exposure.
Yeah, there you go.
But Arcady has tons of files. He's got piles and piles of paper. He needs English speakers he can trust to sift through it all. What a job, just reading through all those files.
Yeah, that was wild. I'm glad that he called somebody in for help.
And Tatiana even says, what about those over there? And Arcady says, well, I've already read those. So he's already dove into it. He's just trying to even out the workload, I think.
Yeah, exactly. He's handing off the grunt work to his grunts, who are going to go and wind their way through it.
All right, let's go to Martha's. Jamie, Philip/Clark are in the car. Philip/Clark and Hans are in the car, worried about Martha having some sort of a trap ready for Clark as he walks up there.
Right.
But there's no trap. She just tells Clark about Tavit's line of questioning, and Clark tries to reassure her that they don't know everything, that you know more than them, and therefore you have the power.
Yeah.
And Tavit's job is to make you feel like he knows something, even if he doesn't know it, so that he has power over you.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. Because Clark, Philip, and his unguardedness with Martha, because of his feelings for Martha, he's not on guard with her the way that he should be. Even though he's watching out for possible, physical danger, betrayal type stuff, he's not emotionally guarded with this woman.
Yeah, she's trouble.
Well, he's giving away tricks of the trade here.
I'm afraid they're going to keep Martha alive now.
He's giving away tricks of the trade. And he's telling her how to lie convincingly to someone. And I cannot imagine that these writers will allow our audience to know this, that he's taught this to Martha, without applying Martha's intelligence and logic to the situation and saying, okay, so you know how to do this. You know how to help me lie convincingly. How much lying have you done to me?
Right. That makes you a genius liar, too.
Yeah.
Well, Philip does tell her all the secrets. Look at the tip of his nose, and then we get tons of nose close-ups later in the show.
Right.
And then he encourages her. She's afraid that Tabitha's going to know she's lying, so he teaches her how to look at the nose and not the eyes and get confident and all that. And I really do think, man, I'm afraid they're going to keep Martha alive and she's going to fuck something up. And maybe you're right. Maybe it's because Philip trusts her too much. Just kill her off, man.
He trusts her too much. He's got feelings for her. This is the trouble with a honey trap. A honey trap works both ways. You're trapping the other person. You have the advantage because you have information on your side. You know more than the other person, like Clark said in the scene. But you have feelings too.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this now without the robot here, because we know he's madly in love with Martha, but they need to get rid of Martha yesterday.
You realize I'm here too, and I like Martha?
Yeah, but you're not in love with Martha like the robot is.
Well, no, okay, I'm not.
Or like Philip stupidly is. All right, we go to the hotel romance with Elizabeth and the manager, and they sex it up. And then they just leave. I guess she's just teeing them up for next time. They just have sex and leave.
I love how you refer to sex when you talk about this show.
Well, what do you want? You want details?
Oh, you know, but your terminology is so just like, just devoid of like romance and flowery language. It's just, you know, oh, they sex it up.
I'm a professional podcaster, Jamie. I just deliver the facts. All right. Nina finds Anton's notes under the bed, the mattress, whatever, between the mattress and the frame. And it's a letter/story to Jacob, his son.
Right.
That he can't deliver. He just has to write it.
Right.
This all happens quick. The sex scene with Elizabeth and the dude, and then the letter and the mattress, and then a commercial.
Yeah.
And we come back from the commercial, and in, back in the garage, Elizabeth comes home. And she's got that look on her face that makes me wonder, honey pot, honey trap. I just went through the honey trap, and I feel funny. Okay, you tell me, Jamie, am I reading too much into that, or is she just returning to the scene with Paige and feel funny about that? Like her and Paige just sat there hours ago.
No, I think she feels awful about it, and she should. She should. She has just done something so personal with somebody, and you know, and it didn't mean anything. It was a complete manipulation and a lie, and I'd be sitting there kind of feeling awful too.
I just wonder why they picked that spot. I guess it's a good spot for us to see a slow close up on her face.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great spot because it's an enveloping kind of atmosphere around the character. It kind of gives you that feeling of being inside the person's inner mind, you know?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've got the, you know, what, the superego, the ego, and the id, you know, in classic psychology and terminology, you know, and she's there and she's wrapped in really two darknesses, because she's inside of the garage and she's inside of the car. And then, you know, her mind is inside of herself. And, you know, I thought it was really poetic.
It's like the Russian doll trick.
There you go.
All right. Philip and Gabriel are on the park bench, and they start talking about this guy, Abbasin Zadran, who is actually the dude on the next episode card. It's the title of the next episode. And he's the Pakistani guy they can trust that they're going to try to turn.
Okay.
That's one of the three guys visiting over the Mujahideen. And Gabriel asks Philip about Paige, and Philip just shuts that down. We'll be fine. And Philip wants to set up a trip for Elizabeth to see her mother. And Gabriel says, well, that's not possible. And you know it's not possible. But Philip wants more yeses, Jamie. He leaves with that statement. I need more yeses from you.
Yeah. watching Philip in this scene was really difficult because of Matthew Reese's acting. He's so good at what he does. And Philip is so tightly coiled right now. He's so wound, really wound. And I'm waiting for the coil to pop. And
yeah, I think you're right. He's got all kinds of pressures and tensions pulling and pushing from every direction on him.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, Jamie, this show, The Americans, is so rich of with content that when we do these podcasts, they're so full of content and things to consider and talk about and angles we have to view and discuss, and way, way different than like Louis, or way different than even Saul or Breaking Bad. They're just so intensely rich with details.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, this is the writing, I tell you, and this is coming from somebody who writes for a living. I've spent my life around words and really, really good writing and really smart people. I'm telling you, this series is freaking brilliant. It's brilliant.
All right, let's go to Taffet again. Taffet and Martha now are having their meeting, and Taffet says to her, "You've had more access to Gad's office than anyone else." And he starts right in on the relationships. "You've never been married. You don't have relationships." This is the crack in the armor that I think Taffet goes after, Jamie. This is the crack in anyone's armor in the spy game, is their relationships.
Yeah.
So Taffet uses the universal, "Is there anything else I need to know?" line, that is the most infamous line that you see it all the time on TV shows with police. "Is there anything in that vehicle I should know about?" Like, they open the door for you to incriminate yourself.
Yeah, that's a very open-ended question, and you have to answer it because you're in a situation where you're being questioned. And it is perfect because, you know, I was looking at the scene. She's got this mic in front of her. She's being recorded. He's examining her. She's got to be sweating bullets on the inside. And here's the open-ended question. And, yeah, brilliant.
It's also kind of a sign of weakness, though, too. Like, if he resorts to that, he has nothing more specific to grind into. He just leaves it with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I didn't see it that way. I didn't look at like that at all. Like, I was thinking, you know, this dude is, you know, this is Taffet. This is Taffet, who came back after his first episode of interviews with people, his first question sessions, and said that he felt as though he'd been drinking from a water hose, from a fire hose. A fire hose. That's this dude. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Well, they talk about one relationship Martha had, that Chris Amador guy. Remember him?
Yeah, I remember poor Chris Amador, poor dead Chris Amador. Yeah.
He's Stan's buddy.
Yeah.
He's a lot like Adderall, right? Almost a carbon copy of Adderall.
No.
Well, they're both physically and they look the same.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they kind of do.
No, they don't. They totally don't.
Amador was bald, but...
Amador was bald and he wasn't a black guy.
I don't know. They seem very similar to me. They're agents in the office. She kind of falls for them. She falls for Clark. He's an agent somewhere. I mean, she's got kind of that MO.
She likes important men.
Important, mysterious men that lie to her and cheat on her. Right. All right. Taffet already knows about Amador, though, and Martha leaves. And we think, or as an audience, I think we think this, does he know anything? What do you think, Jamie? Does Taffet know anything?
I think Taffet knows stuff. I do. I'll be surprised if he comes back without any sort of pushback after this interview. I don't know. Taffet is a tough one. That dude, I love the way they wrote him. And I love that dude who acts the part. I don't know his name, and I'm so sorry. I didn't think to look him up. The guy who plays, the actor who plays Walter Taffet, is amazingly good. He's just wonderful. And he plays the heck out of this role.
They nailed it with the character casting, for sure.
They certainly did.
All right, Russian cafeteria food. We go back to Nina and Baklanov. They're going to the cafeteria for lunch, and Baklanov tells her that the Israelis traded him, so he's been shifted around too. He's Israeli, and they traded him to the Russians.
Okay, so yeah, so this is, I really wish you would go back and watch the episode that, his episode, because you would get so much out of it, because he made references to that. See, in that episode, there was a bit of that going on. There was this Israeli dude who was the one that was in the safe house with Philip, and that's the episode that we got to see so much of how Philip's mind works. And this guy, this Israeli guy, who they traded Baklanov for, they traded Anton for this other guy. He's the one, that other guy is the one that was asking Philip all these questions and talking to him about him liking the cold and being so sort of like picking at Philip's psyche, you know, kind of thing. It was a fantastic episode. And this episode that we watched this week referenced that heavily.
Well, poor Baklanov has no home base to go to. He thinks the Israelis are as much thugs and monsters as the Russians are.
Yeah, he does. He's, like, stuck between a rock and a hard place. He's in a really bad position, that dude.
Well, he's got Nina now, so he's got her.
Oh, at least he's got Nina, lovely Nina, who would never betray him.
She tells him that they traded her around, too.
Yeah.
And then she reveals that Jacob would be proud, uses the name Jacob. And then references the story and her secret that she won't reveal to anyone else. But she pretty much tells him, I found your note, your little story.
Right. So what else does she say to him in that? Like, she says to him basically in there, like, hey, look, dude, I'm going to be spying on you. So I know what's going on in your life. You know, I found your letters. I've searched your room. And I'm going to keep your secret. Why? I don't know. But I'm going to keep your secret. So you're safe with me. So now she's, you know, she's got his trust.
A shared secret like that is an intimate thing. It's a good way to build more intimacy on Nina's part.
Exactly.
Even if she reveals that she's sneaking around in this stuff.
And so here's the question when it comes to Nina. Nina is a person who has certainly been traded. She has been treated like a commodity by everyone, with the exception of what's his name, Costarona, what's his the character, what's his Oleg, with the exception of Oleg. Oh, I think Oleg is the only person in her life who didn't just want to use her, and so Nina has a really legitimate reason to truly be on Anton's side. But is she?
Where will Nina end up? They turned her out the door. You're free to go, little bird. Fly away. Where would she go? Stay in Russia? Go where? Do what?
I think Nina would end up in Paris, living in her own apartment, you know, painting or something, making art, being a waitress in a cafe. I think, you know, deep in her soul, she wants a real life. I think she wants to have an actual life and be a real person without having to lie every day of her existence and, you know, trade in human souls and misery. But I don't think that that's going to happen for Nina. And I guess the question is the degree to which she accepts her fate.
What do you think will ultimately happen to her?
I think she'll end up dead.
Yeah, me too. Dead as Martha.
You stop it.
All right, commercial break. We come back, and here's your Betsy. Here's your third Betsy. Right. Elizabeth and the Hotel Romeo are going through the office, and he shows her Betsy, the computer.
Right.
Pretty interesting here, Jamie, I guess pre-internet, to pull off Elizabeth's job here, you literally had to get to the computer and sit in front of it. There's no hacking into the network and getting the info. You got to sit in front of the damn thing.
Right.
And that's all this effort she's put forth to get in front of this guy's computer.
That's right. Because every network was closed. Like, there was no internet or very little internet.
There was a cool reference here to what's going on with terrorism today, too, because she gets a little window where he goes away and she finds what she needs on the computer. But then she uses his own tools against him. Like the convenience of the surveillance camera. She knows when he's coming back. Kind of a prelude, I think, to terrorism, where terrorists use our own systems kind of against us.
Yeah, well, certainly terrorists, were outpaced by spies, you know, and I think probably the spy trade is where you find the most ingenuity when it comes to intrigue, you know, and probably it, you know, sort of ballooned out from there and sort of touched all the other sort of secret, you know, societies and institutions and that kind of stuff. So I don't know, but I think you're right. I think that makes sense.
Or we go back to Oleg and Tatiana. They're reading those transcriptions from the papers that Oleg got from Arkady. And one of them is, it gave me payday. I wanted a $100,000 bar. Zinaida,
they were so punchy at that point. They were just like, you could tell they were just exhausted from reading all this data, and just at that point where they were ridiculous, you know, just kind of laughing and just, you know, just blear-eyed and exhausted.
Well, if you're a Russian, that might sound important. Like, gave me payday. I wanted a $100,000 bar. If you don't know what those are, that sounds kind of dramatic, kind of important.
Right. Right. But they knew it was candy.
There's a bunch of other mundane crap like toilet paper and not liking the USFL.
Yeah, you know, that reference to the $100,000 bar, that's what that candy was called back then. It's called a 100 grand bar now, but it used to be called a $100,000 bar.
Oh, I've only ever known it as a $100,000 bar. I didn't know they changed the name.
They did. Like, well, that's dumb. long time ago.
did you recognize the USFL, Jamie?
Yes.
Because of Herschel Walker from Georgia?
Oh, no. But I knew that there was a USFL.
USFL was the competitive league to the NFL.
That's
and
right.
And the big player they stole from out of the grasp of the NFL was Herschel Walker. He was a huge star back then in early 80s. And he ended up going, and so is Steve Young and a couple other guys, but they actually went back to the NFL after the USFL folded.
Right.
But no, that was interesting.
Yeah, that was cool. And because I'm not a real sports girl. I like basketball, but I'm not a real sports girl. I didn't catch that.
So why were they counting beeps? They were counting beeps.
I don't know, but I you know these people. This is going to figure into something. They're going to figure out something. Those beeps mean something.
So those are beeps coming from the robot, or that the robot's passing by something that's beeping and that means something?
I think it may.
Okay.
I think it may. And you know, they've got 539 beeps or 532 beeps or something. Maybe they'll be able to figure out, you know, where people are sitting, or where people are talking about things by the number of beeps, and then sort of narrow it down to be able to not have to parse all of this paperwork the way.
Oh, like a beep is a step, step or something that the robot rolls. It makes a beep.
Right. Well, it is. I mean, that's what the robot beeps as it's moving. So maybe they can, you know, sort of, you know, get to a place where if the robot's not beeping at all, it's, you know, stopped. Or if it's beeped however many times from the morning, you know, it's on this floor. Or, I mean, they could get a lot of information from those beeps.
All right. Twitter at FBI Mail Robot. We need you to tell us what this means.
Yeah, FBI Mail Robot.
Ask at FBI Mail Robot. Tell at FBI Mail Robot to at Scathing Tweets or at Word Girly. Or come back on, robot. We'll get the truth from you.
There you go.
All right, we're going to close it out. Elizabeth comes home and sees Philip sleeping and snuggles up with him. And again, Jamie, this honey trap. She's recovering from this honey trap thing with this hotel guy, and I cannot figure out what it is. It's driving me nuts.
I don't know, but she went downtown, didn't she?
Sexually, you mean?
Yeah, I thought she went downtown.
Yeah, I mean, she's being very, very loving towards Philip, and she's hated him in the last few episodes.
Well, I don't know if she's hated him.
Well, they've had some pretty cold scenes between each other.
Well, during the season, but they've been okay the last few.
All right.
But she's
I want to know what that honey trap problem is, though.
I do, too. I don't know. I mean, I think, okay, she's going through a lot, but they're not speaking. They're not spelling it out for us. And so I don't know if it's a mystery or if we're just supposed to understand that this is hard. I don't know.
So the next morning, Philip talks to Elizabeth about her going to see her mother. and he may have found a way. And then Paige comes in, and he tells her the direct truth of what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Talking about the mother's sick, and how Elizabeth might get to go to see her.
Yeah. So well acted by Holly Taylor. I'm so impressed with her. Her reaction, the look on her face when she realized what it meant that Elizabeth didn't have a choice. She wasn't going to go home and see her mom before her mom died, was heartbreaking. And it was so beautifully done. I loved it.
What was with the open door, closed door ending?
I think that this was a very, very, very artful way of making us realize that she, Paige, knows that her parents are a secret.
So keep the secret, keep Henry away from it, just close it off.
Yep.
Probably that's a good take. Yeah, that's a really good take. They're talking about their plans. They need to talk in private.
This episode was so, so fantastic. I just don't know how they outdo themselves, but they just really do.
All right, episode 11. Next week, episode 12, I am Abbasin Zadron, the Pakistan guy, coming into town, Jamie.
Wow, okay.
You got anything else before we sign off?
I got nothing.
All right, I'll see you next week on 312, Abbasin Zadron.
Sounds great.
Bye.
Bye.